what are some of the areas of AI, perhaps more in security, that we're looking at?
We're breaking it into three really. So AI-assisted development, AI-assisted applications, and AI-assisted tooling or processes.
Is AI our friend or our foe in relation to security?
From a security point of view, I see it in actually a similar bucket to open source, use that usage of third-party libraries and open source. From a business point of view, if you don't use open source, you're going to be slow to deliver, slow to develop. You know, you're going to have to build everything internally. You're not going to be able to, you know, stand on the shoulders of the giants that are creating amazing frameworks and things like that. It's going to really affect your business bottom line. Yes, open source will have, you know, a number of security risks and ways of using it responsibly and mitigating those risks as best we can. I think AI actually fits really neatly into that same bucket.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Security Repo Podcast. Today I'm really excited to be joined by Simon Maple from Sneak to discuss, well, a pretty hot topic. That's artificial intelligence and how it relates to security. Simon has a long and impressive record when working in technology, from startups to massive companies like IBM and now Sneak. Simon today is the principal developer advocate at Sneak, having previously held many leadership roles, including field CTO, again at Sneak, and the director of developer relations. He is a world-renowned speaker and has spoken at many massive and influential conferences, including Java One, DevOps France, DevOps UK, Java Zone, Java Land, and many, many more. But today he is using his decades of tech experience to uncover some of the mysteries that actually surround artificial intelligence. And that's what we have the privilege of discussing with him today. With Simon's extensive knowledge in AI and security, he was the perfect guest to come on the show so that I could ask all of the most difficult and challenging and interesting questions I could possibly think of on the subject. And I have to say, his answers are completely insightful, so you really want to stick around for this episode. So enough from me, let's dive straight into it. This episode is the new frontier of security, artificial intelligence, with Simon Maple. This topic that I really want to dive into is something that's, I guess, has become, perhaps, but maybe it started off as a passion of yours, but it's certainly become something that, in what I see and what you're, you know, writing about, what you're talking about, is increasingly artificial intelligence, and in particular, artificial intelligence in cybersecurity. So before I want to get into that, I want to start off with some little bit of context. And maybe a good place to start is some categories of AI and how we actually use them, because some people's brains might go to ChatGPT, some people's brains might go to some AI-assisted tools that help you to write or look through logs. What are some of the areas of AI, perhaps more in security, that we're looking at?
Yeah, it's a really good observation, actually. And I think when you do talk about AI, even something like ChatGPT, people are going to be using ChatGPT for different things. Some people are going to be using it, you know, to write stories or poems. Other people, maybe code generation. Other people to review and observe various coding and things like that. So I think there's definitely categories which we've understood from the conversations that we've had, and we're breaking it into three really. So AI-assisted development, AI-assisted applications, and AI-assisted tooling or processes. And the first one, AI-assisted development, is a very, very interesting one, which is really kind of shaking up the way we do development these days. And I think it's all about how you use AI to assist you writing code. So it's code generative GPT, basically. And things like Copilot, things like Amazon Code Whisperer, those types of things which will help you with that. That's one style category. That doesn't necessarily make its way into a product that you actually ship. It's just the ability to help you write that code. The second piece is AI-assisted applications, which is much more about shipping AI. And this is really about if I wanted to provide a capability to my users which uses AI, it's got AI in the application. This is what we would refer to as an AI-assisted application. So, for example, something as simple as a chatbot, having AI embedded in the application that helps, that the user can maybe even directly interact with. And then the third one is really AI-assisted tooling, where AI-assisted processes whereby not just writing code, but using AI throughout that process, whether it's in the SDLC, whether it's, like you say, you know, reading logs, those kind of things, whether it's, you know, doing something in for your Jira tickets or basically helping with your day-to-day business needs. That's the third category. A bit of a catch-all, that one, but it's the, you know, where we use AI elsewhere. And I think the first two for me are the most interesting, that how developers are changing the way they build and how we're seeing different applications holding on to or building in AI into what they're doing.
Absolutely. You know, it is really interesting, because when we, you know, I think when we think about AI, it's actually hard to kind of categorize and define sometimes, because especially if you're not in it, because it keeps popping up in all these different places, and then you're kind of just wondering, like, okay, but like, how can I use it, or what's its limitations? And I think they're constantly being kind of discovered and stretched. So it's really, I'm sure these categories will probably change over time, but it's at least interesting to kind of put them in some kind of boxes. What made you first get interested, you know, in this AI space? Where did that first kind of light bulb come on that you started diving into this a little bit more?
At Sneak, for example, we've been using AI for many, many years. So it's not something that's necessarily new to us. And in fact, it's been very interesting, actually, from a company that uses AI internally, where you almost don't see the industry trust around it. So years ago, if I was to say we use AI at Sneak 3-4 years ago, there wouldn't necessarily have been that trust around AI, whereby you can just say something and people wouldn't just, you know, normally think of it as some kind of marketing BS, right? But these days, you're being asked, what are you doing with AI in your company or your product today? And if you're not doing something, then questions start getting asked. So it's amazing how things have changed in that respect. So we're definitely talking about it slightly differently. But I think for me personally, I would say two things. First of all, just, you know, ChatGPT just becoming so amazing. Having that kind of like conversation, being able to use it whereby if I wanted to write a blog, or if I wanted to, you know, do anything textual with it, I can just say something and it will create me at such speed, huge amounts of actually largely pretty accurate information, whereby I would need to go through and obviously, you know, fill a few things in, cut some bits out, ask it a few more questions, but I'm interacting it so with it. So, and actually experiencing huge gain from it. So well, it becomes very, very exciting. But the second thing really that kind of piqued my interest was, as soon as you see things like Copilot, like Code Whisperer and other things that are actually really changing the way our processes and you know, day-to-day jobs work, this is a real disruptor that I figure, you know, you look at it and you think, look, I need to be on board with this. I need to be a part of this, because this is as big as open source. This is as big as, you know, the internet. When you see these big changes that occur in your career, as soon as you recognize and see, okay, AI is one of those, and you know, the way we think about AI in 5 to 10 years, I mean, gosh, that's such a long amount of time in AI, when you think about how far we've come just this year or in the last 6 months. But yeah, we you know, things are going to happen in such a different way. Just that wanting to be a part of that was really the big challenge and big change for me.
Yeah, it's so interesting what you're talking about, the trust, because I can really relate to that. Last year at Black Hat, 2022 Black Hat, I wrote like a summary about, you know, pretty much about like what I saw in the vendor hall, you know, like what new technologies are coming out, what are people pitching, what are that. And my whole conclusion was that everyone's saying they're doing AI and everyone's full of crap. Essentially, because I just did not believe that any of this, and a little bit of that came from, I had my own startup beforehand and we had investors. And, you know, all of our advisors were saying, you have to cover, you know, a couple of things in your pitch. One, that you're using AI, even if you're not. Say something about the cloud and say something about crypto, you know, like some kind of blockchain-y thing. If you cover those three things, then you'll get investment. And so this is kind of like what I look at when I see all these people. And then ChatGPT came out and totally changed my opinion of, oh my God, this is actually crossing the threshold into something workable now. But with this all in mind, I want to ask you a question, and I think I kind of know where you stand, but is AI our friend or our foe in relation to security?
Mm. Yeah, really interesting question. And you know, actually, I mentioned open source actually just slightly earlier. I from a security point of view, I see it in actually a similar bucket to open source, that usage of third-party libraries and open source. From a business point of view, if you don't use open source, you're going to be slow to deliver, slow to develop. You know, you're going to have to build everything internally. You're not going to be able to, you know, stand on the shoulders of the giants that are creating amazing frameworks and things like that. It's going to really affect your business bottom line. And yes, open source will have, you know, a number of security risks and ways of using it responsibly and mitigating those risks as best we can. I think AI actually fits really neatly into that same bucket, in the sense that in, you know, I expect, you know, no less than 6 months, a year, you will see the, and I think the vast majority are already using it, but it's going to be something that's so broadly and widely accepted as a tool that even enterprises are allowing. You know, we hear loads of stories about enterprises saying, no, you're not going to be using, you know, a ChatGPT or a Copilot, or because we're too worried about things being shared, things being read, etc. And I think, you know, it's just something that's going to happen. It's an inevitability. And if you're not on board that, you're going to actually be less competitive to, you know, in the marketplace. So it's something which has to happen from the business point of view. It does have risks, though. Absolutely does. You know, we look at things like generative code, and how generative, you know, whether it's Copilot, whether it's AWS Code Whisperer, whether it's just ChatGPT asking it for some code, you get some code back. There are studies that show, I think 40% of Copilot, I think something around that, 40% of Copilot responses will have security vulnerabilities or security issues in them. You know, the others are going to be actually quite similar, and there are reports that also say, we as developers put too much trust in them. We believe in it too much. And I think, you know, things like ChatGPT, like we were saying, you can have a really good conversation, get really good information back. You believe it, you trust it, because, you know, it pulls things so quickly and things that you didn't know, and it pulls it all together for you. And you just think you have this, you know, inbuilt trust for it, or you build that up. And I think that's definitely something that we see, whereby developers are more trustworthy of generated code from AI code completion tools versus doing it themselves, when actually it's quite the opposite. It's actually, you're more likely to get vulnerabilities in them than your own code, as studies have shown. So in terms of, you know, is it our friend or foe? From the business point of view, it's absolutely our friend. There are very few things in security, you know, that are our friends from a business point of view. There's always things that, you know, anything new brings new attack vectors, new risk, new mitigations that need to happen. So absolutely, there are, you know, we need to look at things like the OWASP top 10 for LLMs. Really interesting new top 10 from the OWASP Foundation, which talks about how we need to, you know, understand, educate, and mitigate these different issues when we're building LLMs into our application and using LLMs ourselves. So we need to understand these new things that we're pulling into our application. But as a whole, it has to be seen as a friend. It's an inevitability, and it's a friend.
Yeah, you've touched on so many points here, and I absolutely agree. And I think, like, the point is that we have to start using it and embracing it, or we are going to fall behind. But we do need to kind of be aware of things like AI code bias, which you touched on, which we trust things too much. I wrote an article last year after Copilot came out saying, called Shitty Code, Shitty Copilot, which basically said, if you give it a crappy input, you're more likely to get crappy code back based on what it thinks you're trying to do. And something really funny is we put in authors of well-known open source projects, authors that we considered really good coders, and we gave it the same inputs, but with an author of me and with an author of someone well known, and it gave better code. But this is all from the business side, all from an organization or a developer side. I want to flip the script a little bit. So AI is potentially our friend, you know, in security in lots of different ways, but how are malicious actors, how are the hackers, how are the modern day attackers, how are they going to be leveraging AI, and how can we actually start to basically build up defenses of that?
Yeah, interesting. And actually, you know, there's a couple of things there, you know, using AI to their own advantage or finding new attack vectors because of AI from a malicious actor point of view. And I think, you know, one thing that we saw, you know, early on was particularly with code generation tools and things like that, was using using code generation and things like that to build out exploit generation tools, which was really, really interesting. So effectively using very quickly building out exploits that you could use against, whether it's third-party vulnerabilities or other things. Things like that were really, really interesting. One of the things that I think is most interesting that the OWASP group came out with their top 10 was this basically showing a number of different ways in which an attacker can, you know, not break an app necessarily, but attack an application that is using this. And we're talking about data just then, anything from biasing to getting into training data and actually polluting training data, whether it's biasing, whether it's unethical, whether it's competing, you know, doing those kind of things is very, very interesting. Other things like prompt injection, really, really fun thing to do if you haven't done it before, is go to the Lakira site and have a play with their prompt injection. They have an app called Gandalf, and you basically have a play with it. There's various different levels, and you know, prompt injection is such a powerful way of tricking an AI, an LLM, basically by pretending you have more credentials or the authorization to do certain things, and you're basically trying to get this password out of it. And one of the core things here really is about whether you allow your LLM to have data access to the most sensitive data or not, and so forth, and what it can do with that data. And so these are some of the areas, new attack vectors effectively, that attackers, malicious actors can make use of.
Yeah, very interesting. I think like AI is kind of lowering the bar for some new attackers as well, in a similar way that, like, you know, when script kiddies first kind of started banding together and you could have these exploits, you know, AI is kind of almost helping the new generation of script kiddies being able to, you know, start doing things that even they might not even understand at this point, but start poisoning some things, maybe doing some prompts, doing some simple things. AI has to learn from somewhere, so it's not really ever going to be on the cutting edge of attacking, at least not at the moment, but it certainly can help. So from the business perspective, we've talked about it. From malicious actors, we've talked about it. And one of the things that, I mean, we touched on this at the start when we were talking about the categories of AI, but how do security tools actually leverage AI in their products? You know, because a lot of this, at least recently, has been kind of total BS, just been catchphrases. We use AI, and perhaps they are using some AI on some areas, but defining exactly what that is, I mean, that's tricky. But for the companies that are leveraging, I know Sneak has been leveraging true AI for a while. What does that look like in tools? How can security tools leverage that?
Mm. And it's funny actually say true AI, because it's funny how a lot of groups are basically leveraging the GPT style, the LLM style, very, very quickly, and almost like putting very thin wrappers on what's, you know, new and fresh coming out, without necessarily having the years of kind of like experience in AI. I think actually that's a wonderful thing. The fact that it's the APIs and the ability to access GPT through OpenAI and things like that, which has made it so possible for people to embrace it as well. I mean, from the Sneak point of view, we've been using a method of AI which is called symbolic AI, and we've been using that for many, many years. And the difference, I would say, is if you used to have, whether it's ChatGPT or something else, you know, create you some code or create you any text, whatever it is, the one thing it won't understand is the context of what it has provided you. It understands it's provided a number of tokens in an order which it believes to be, you know, the correct, most statistically accurate order that it can do based on its training. But what it won't do is it won't understand why it's done that. It's just correlation. And if you were to look at something like code, if you were to ask, you know, whether a data flow or something, variable assignment happens in a specific way, what is the value of this variable at this point, and so forth. GPT won't necessarily understand any of that, because it doesn't understand the branch flows, the code flows, etc. It understands that following, you know, public, maybe the best word after that could be final based on my request or whatever it is. But what it won't understand is whether something is truly vulnerable or not, based on the state, based on the data flows, and so forth. So what Sneak does is Sneak has trained based on a lot of our third-party vulnerability library. So our engine basically looks at that and understands the types of, you know, basically what data flows look like through those and when specific version, specific code samples are vulnerable and not. So what we do is we have three pieces. We have a source point, a sync point, and some method of sanitization in between. And we follow through the data flows, multi-line or you know, those kind of things. Multi-file even, to say, this is the input point where we get some kind of data, some user information. It may go through some sanitization or may not, but then it goes to a sync point, a point at which an exploit could occur. And the AI piece there is for us really to understand, first of all the cases that this could exist across hundreds of thousands of open source of repositories. So we understand, you know, show me all the sources, show me all the different types of sanitizations and different types of syncs. We're not doing regex here. We're really trying to understand what is a sanitization, what is a sync, and then go through that. And then the second piece is using AI to both generate and also tune rules. So in order to actually have accurate rules to say, okay, this is what we believe a vulnerability looks like, that's defined by you know, a rule, and to get that rule, that's a tough thing to do. If you try and create a simple rule, you'll have either far too many false negatives or far too many false positives. But to actually get that accurate and tested across hundreds of thousands of repositories, you need to have some level of fine tuning and iterative development to make sure that that's accurate. And I think our ability to test across huge numbers of repositories, because we can test on source and because we're so fast to run, that allows us to you know, pull that data, similar to an LLM, like, you know, pull as much data as we can, but using symbolic AI to understand data flow. So we basically identify, this gets assigned to this at this point, this then calls into this, this then performs this, you know, whatever method it is, whatever function it is. We understand those steps, and there's a core difference between that and LLMs. But we also, you know, with something like our code fix, we use LLMs to suggest a code fix for us. But straight after that, we then use another different type of AI, which is symbolic AI, to validate that. So this hybrid use of AI is really important in order to be able to say, I want to use the right AI to generate and then the right AI to validate. And this is the core balance of using the right AI for the right reasons in you know, security tools or any tooling, really. But yeah, we that's how we make use of it in Sneak.
Okay, that's great to kind of comprehend and understand, because one of the things that I've been playing around with, everyone's played around with ChatGPT, but, you know, I was like, hey, can you create an example of some vulnerable code and some non-vulnerable code? And I'll, you know, insert said vulnerability. Show me an example of using credentials or secrets ineffectively or user whatever. And then often what I would found is that it would give me one really vulnerable piece of code as a vulnerable, and then one kind of vulnerable piece of code as a non-vulnerable. You know, like it didn't because where it's pulling this from, both of them weren't really that great. And that's really interesting in that LLM kind of world, is that it's done its job because it doesn't understand the context. Like, it's, hey, it's giving you one and here's the other one. But almost what you're saying is, if you then ran that back through a secondary validation of a different type of that, you would say, actually, both of these are vulnerable. We need to start again because we've failed in the data flow and all, or how is this happening? Have I understood that kind of process correctly?
And I think, you know, if we were to even take some vulnerable code and you ask whether it's Bard or GPT or whatever it is, and you say, show me the vulnerabilities in here, sometimes it will be good and sometimes it will be accurate, but sometimes it will just pick a vulnerability which it doesn't understand the context. Like, for example, there's an interesting one, which is an SQL injection vulnerability I saw just earlier today, where I think it was creating a query which actually did a, you know, select whatever star from whatever, and then it did an addition plus this variable, and this variable was actually a constant, so it's just a hard coded constant. And it was given as a SQL injection vulnerability. And it's because that line looks like it matches patterns that are SQL vulnerabilities. But what it didn't do is it didn't work out whether that variable, that constant in the end, actually came from user input. Because if it doesn't come from user input, there's no tainted data. It's just, it's our data that we're using. It's basically us hard coding. We could have actually just written that string fully out. that select string fully out. So it's interesting that it won't identify those code flows. It won't identify those data flows or how those variables are set. And that's the core piece which symbolic AI understands, whereas LLMs, it's pure pattern matching, which is great for certain things, particularly creation. But that fine-tuned understanding of it is not something it's proficient at, and not something it was made for.
So going down this path, a question I'm curious of now is what's your opinion about the safety of using some of these AI tools in our development lifecycle? So you mentioned before that a lot of companies, I know Samsung is one, I can't think of some more, but I know a lot of big companies have really banned BART and GPT and other LLMs that are using, you know, like that are using this to prevent them. You know, what are the risks of using AI? We've established that it's our friend. So what are the risks? Why have some companies banned us from hanging out with our friend?
A lot of the risks that folks, I mean, take the Samsung example, it's a great example. You know, there was an individual developer that was working for Samsung, assume he still works at Samsung, who uploaded sensitive code into, I think it was probably GPT-3.5 or something like that. And they uploaded sensitive Samsung source code across to there. And so from that point of view, it was pure IP. It was an IP concern. There are a number of other enterprises that we talk to. A lot of the time the bans are because they don't understand it fully. They see it as something which has potential to be dangerous. Obviously huge potential to be very powerful and beneficial. And so the bans that we're seeing aren't necessarily long-term bans, but they're more, let us get to grips on how you can use it first, then we'll start making that available to you. One thing that we've seen as well is when these bans come in from, like, you know, a company corporate point of view, it's funny how we see this is more anecdotal than pure evidence, but anecdotally we hear of many, many people that are still using AI, but they're not necessarily using it under corporate IDs or through the, you know, creating a VPN and using ChatGPT that way. And I think this is where we have to understand the flow is going this way. It's an inevitability. You can't hide from it. The more you don't try and add policies around it, like good policies and responsible policies and educate about responsible policies, the more problems you could potentially get into, because people will use it the way that they feel they should use it, or not even caring about other policies. So I think it's definitely an interesting one. I think, you know, there's a lot that's happening. The technology has improved a pace far faster than anyone kind of like expected it to take off, certainly over the last 6 months, I would say. But now it's here. I think there's a lot of things that is catching up with it, more of the enterprise ready stuff. I don't know if you saw ChatGPT, OpenAI have created an enterprise ready ChatGPT, which is like SOC 2 compliant. And there's other things that, you know, mean you basically can't upload, to the public, which is used as training data and things like that. These are almost like the guarantees which organizations need. And I think things are catching up, but let's put it this way. There is definitely a number of golden paths whereby it can be really dangerous from uploading IP and uploading sensitive information to these third party vendors. And that's what this, from the security point of view, from the regulations point of view, can be very, very dangerous. So yeah, I think it will come. But right now, yeah, a lot of people are treading lightly in a lot of places.
Yeah, definitely. And for like my perspective too, you know, like the banning of it, I feel like that's just a terrible idea in general, because it does take it. People are still going to use it. Well, not everyone, but a lot of people are still going to use it, and it's going to be outside of your control then, outside of what you're at least aware of and looking into if they are using the VPNs. Because everyone's curious about AI, but I think a lot of people, particularly in tech, are a little bit terrified about AI and not keeping up with it. You know, it's kind of like the computer's just come out. Is it going to take my job, or is it going to assist me in my job? If I don't follow this trend, then I'm kind of be out of a job. So I'm going to do whatever it takes to keep using it, to keep learning about it, and to have it assess me so that someone else doesn't beat it, even if that's against company policy. At least that's how I look at it too. I want to start looking towards the future now, kind of tapping into this fear of where AI is going. What is your interpretation of the future in security? A lot of people have kind of suggested, I've read some articles, that perhaps AI is going to consolidate the market into one or two vendors that are going to be able to do everything in security because they've got the LLMs, they've got the data, they've got everything, and then everyone's going to be out. So where is the future of AI and security going? 10 years from now, what does it look like?
Yeah, interesting. I don't believe that necessarily. I think there's always going to be a spread of LLMs. In fact, I think everyone's going to have their own LLM, really, and it's going to be the thing that they build on. And there's probably going to be a number of LLMs that are just going to be built off these cores. But you know, I don't think there will be consolidation to that extreme. I think while it's important to have technologies like AI and other things that are kind of like pulling in, I think an equally important thing is really the usage of AI, how that builds into a developer workflow, how that, you know, provides developers with the right information that they need to be able to do their job. I'm not one that sits in the camp of, you know, AI is replacing developers' jobs in that sense either. I see it as a massive assister. It's like almost like an IDE for a developer, right? It comes to that. It's at that level. It's a tool that a developer can use to develop code. It's not, you can't go to AI and say, hey, let me, you know, give me an application that does this. Maybe one day, maybe in 10 years you might. But these days, you know, we're talking about small pieces of function. So as and when this gets built into an application, I think it's equally important to have solutions that work within those workflows and within those delivery pipelines. And this is one thing that when we think about it from an AI point of view and an AI security vendor point of view, isn't going to be, you know, one size fits all. Everyone works differently. Everyone is going to want a different levels, exactly the same way we have today. So I don't think there will be a, you know, couple of people are going to have amazing LLMs, and as a result, they're going to be the only players. I think it will be fairly distributed, and I believe and hope there will be, you know, a good choice out there for people. And every, you know, we see today with the number of security vendors, you know, everyone prefers different people a lot of the time as well, right? And it's those differences in implementation that matter, the usage and the ways at which they get that value and that data from people is what's important, not just how they came about that, which is more the AI piece. So it's a really hard question with AI, just because it's accelerating so fast and it's so rapid right now with its deployment. But I think one thing that you definitely will have with security vendors is security vendors that are deeply knowledgeable about AI and have been using AI for many, many years. And you'll get security vendors that are very light on AI and wrapping AI capabilities. And I think it will be pretty obvious pretty quick which ones are actually using AI deeply and which ones are using using AI without actually providing much value on top. And I think that's going to be the real separator in terms of at what level do you use AI and how valuable is your AI over a ChatGPT or something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's really interesting to see where it's going to go and in all the different contexts. Slightly terrifying, but I think, you know, but also very, very exciting.
It's what makes it fun, isn't it? That edge.
There's always so much resistance to progress. You know, if you ICE was such a big business, you know, in the early 20th century, that when the refrigerator became mainstream, these ICE campaigns started lobbying to the public that refrigerators were dangerous. You know, like, this is how ridiculous. And so, you know, we may just be the ICE people lobbying against it at this point. You know, Well, it's been a fascinating conversation. I've certainly questioned a lot. I've learned a lot. But I want to finish up with a little game I like to play with everyone. And I want to know, it's called Best and Worst. And I want to know, what's the best
or worst, best and worst security advice you would give someone or you have been given?
From the worst, let's start with the worst. That's easiest. From the worst, I would say, well, what on the AI front, I would just say, you know, trust everything that AI gives you. Be very over-reliant on AI and just believe. That's by far the worst advice. I heard this at a conference, actually, one person who said, I don't need developer tooling because we run full tooling in production. So we effectively do pen testing in production. So we don't need any tooling prior to production, which I thought was fascinating. And it was the kind of person I was chatting to that, you know, you're never going to change their mind, right? That's their mindset. It's maybe even their users can be their security testers. I don't know. But that was one, not necessarily a piece of advice, but an opinion that someone had, which was frankly scary. The best, well, I mean, I guess, you know, from the developer or from the security point of view, I think the best piece of advice that I would give a security person is think about yourself in the same way as people think about a platform team, right? You're offering a service to your developers, and it's your developers need to make the right opinion or right decision, and you need to help them make that decision, and it needs to be done through services that you provide. And I think, you know, it's that mindset change, and that's a really good position of understanding the mindset of developers being enabled to make that decision themselves, and security folks being empowered really to make that decision, and security folks being the enablers to that, to help developers to reach those conclusions. That would be probably my advice to security. For developers, I would kind of like say, you know, treat security issues just like any other issue. Treat them like quality issues or performance issues. Give them the same value that you would those quality issues. And I think we'd be in a better place today with that.
Well, I think that's some pretty good advice. So, Simon, I just want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your insights. You do write lots of blogs. You speak at places. Where can people best follow you if they want to track you down somewhere, maybe reach out or just kind of follow your advice in other areas? What's the best place that people can kind of follow you?
Yeah, I mean, I write on the sneak.io blog pretty much weekly these days. I'm just starting back up in DevRel, but that's my new schedule of trying to post a blog a week pretty much. So check out the sneak.io blog. Twitter is probably the best place to catch me on. So is that called X now? I can't remember. But whatever that's called when this post goes out. Twitter, SJ Maple on Twitter. That's probably the best place to catch me. Or exactly that at conferences, DevSecCon or in person conferences. Feel free to grab and reach out to me.
Awesome. Well, Simon, thanks again for coming. Been a fascinating episode, and I hope to have you on the podcast again.